for free from your app store now. I'm off to listen to Smooth Country, everybody. Coming up at 7 on LBC, I am. It's Rachel Johnson, but now it's time for Ben Kentish.
Sounds like a nice Friday night, Sheila.
I love it, I love it.
She's not listening to me, you see.
I'm not.
Thank you, Sheila. Have a good weekend. Hello, and a very, very good afternoon this Friday afternoon on the show.
From July the 1st, you will not be allowed to strike up Gitan or Gaulois in many parts of France.
France, yes, France says it's banning smoking in pretty much all public places where there might be children present. So if you are off across the Channel on your summer holiday this August, don't expect to be able to light up on the beach, in a park, or even at a bus stop. The French government says tobacco must disappear where there are children. Which sounds like quite a good idea to me. So why is our government backing away from making smoking illegal in more public places? And shouldn't they think again, not least of all, when it comes to the health of our children? Call me this afternoon, 0345 6060 973. That, next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 4 o'clock. The man accused of driving into a crowd during Liverpool's victory parade on Monday has appeared in court. 53-year-old Paul Doyle is facing charges including dangerous driving and GBH with intent. He's due to enter a plea in August. LBC's Liam Gotting reports from Liverpool Crown Court.
Our provisional trial date, should it get to that stage, was set for the 24th of November this year. The court was told a trial could last between 3 to 4 weeks, but Mr. Doyle will next appear at Liverpool Crown Court on the 14th of August to enter a plea.
Former Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams has won a libel action against the BBC. He said he was defamed by a story alleging he sanctioned the killing of a former Sinn Féin official, which he denies. Mr. Adams has been awarded £84,000 in damages. Russell Brand will go on trial in June next year after denying rape and sexual assault. The 49-year-old appeared at Southwark Crown Court earlier. He's facing allegations from four women between 1999 and 2005. Ahead of a UK-wide ban, LBC has learnt people are stockpiling single-use vapes as retailers attempt to shift products before they're illegal. One store in Scotland reported customers travelling hundreds of miles to get cut-price items. The ban comes into force this weekend. Health Minister Baroness Gillian Meron says that she wants to see the law go even further.
Vapes have a role, absolutely, for adults who are seeking to give up smoking. But if you don't smoke, don't vape. And we need to go further, and we are doing, in terms of legislation, to protect children and young people from this.
And Banksy has revealed a new artwork, but it's not known where it is. Images on his social media show a lighthouse. There's speculation it could be in Marseille. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 55 points at 87.72. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.18. LBC weather turning increasingly breezy with a risk of showers in the north and west tonight. Dry and mainly clear in the south and east, a low of 5. Outbreaks of rain in the north tomorrow, mostly dry with sunshine in the south and southeast. Cloudy with showers elsewhere, a high of 26 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
3 minutes after four. Very, very good afternoon to you this sunny Friday afternoon. Ben Kentish in for Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. Great to have you with us on the show.
We hope that a ceasefire in Gaza will take place so we can return all of the hostages home.
Israel announces that it has accepted a US proposal to bring peace to Gaza. Hamas, though, says it's still reviewing the plan. Are we on the cusp, potentially, of peace in the Middle East? Bringing the very latest. Plus,
hello, London. For whoever needs to hear it, London is for everyone. Whether you were born in Newham or Nigeria, Ealing or India.
Multicultural Londoners say they feel much more of an attachment to their city than they do their country. Less than a third of them expressing a strong affinity for England. Does it matter that so many people don't feel any real attachment to the country that we live in? And are you one of them? Talk more about that after six. And
Donald Trump runs into multiple buzzsaws. This business of governing just doesn't appear to be his forte. I'm Simon Marks. American Week is at 10 to 6.
Call and WhatsApp message now. 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Ben Kentish on LBC.
Good afternoon to you. Here's a scenario for you. Imagine this lovely sunny Saturday afternoon, as they tell us it's going to be, touch wood, tomorrow. It's the end, isn't it? Don't you know it, of half term week. You're running short of activities, sources of amusement for the kids. So it's down to the local playground once again. When you get there, though, some thoughtless parent is sitting there amongst all the children running around, chain smoking. The blend of tar and tobacco wafting slowly through the late spring air. You can't be having that with your kids, so it's off to play on the grass instead. Oh, hold on. A group of teenagers has lit up there too. You can almost see those carcinogens speeding towards your children's lungs. Off to the cafe you go, but they're the same problem. So you give up. Head to the bus stop to take them home, only to find some old man leaning against the lamppost, his smoke drifting into the faces of everybody in the queue. None of those people right now are, in the eyes of the law at least, doing anything wrong. Your children, as the law sees it, have no right to go to the park, no right to go to a cafe, no right to go anywhere in public, really, and not be exposed to something that might increase their risk of getting cancer and all sorts of other illnesses. If your children want to go to the park and you want to take them there and somebody else is smoking and you don't want you, yourself, or them to inhale it, the answer is simple. The law says, go somewhere else. Isn't it about time that changed? France has decided today that the answer to that question is yes. The French government announcing that it is banning smoking in pretty much all public places where there might be children present. So if you are heading across the English Channel this summer, don't expect to be able to light up anytime soon, from the 1st of July at least, in a park, on a beach, at a bus stop, a sports venue, a public garden, the list goes on. Even big outdoor places will be included. The only exceptions, outdoor cafes, outdoor bar terraces, because after all, this is France. If you can't sit in an outdoor cafe on some square and smoke, is it even really French? But our government here is taking a different approach, because here Labour ministers say that, yes, they are considering banning smoking outside schools and in playgrounds and at hospitals, but they are clear that other public outdoor places will not be on the list. Parks, beaches, beer gardens, you will be able to light up however many children might be present nearby. I think, frankly, that's nuts. It's nuts that actually right now it's still legal to light up a cigarette and smoke outside the school gates when you pick your children up. It's just ridiculous that you can go to a playground packed full of kids and decide that your right to smoke in that child's playground trumps the right of all those other children not to inhale your smoke secondhand. So I think the French have got the right idea here. And the reason that they give is simple. They say the freedom to smoke must end. This is the French health minister. The freedom to smoke must end where the freedom of children to breathe fresh air begins. Tobacco, she says, must disappear where there are children. Who can disagree with that? And isn't it about time that our country, our government, followed the French lead on this and said, you can smoke where you want in private, you can smoke when there are no people around, but anywhere there might be children, their right to health comes before your right to smoke. Are you with me on that? Or do you have an objection? Do you think the rights of smokers should somehow trump the rights of kids? Why don't the children just go and play somewhere else? Why don't the parents just keep them at home? 0345 6060 973. This comes in on WhatsApp. Once again, getting rid of our rights. If you think your right to smoke when and where you want is more important than a child's right to breathe clean air, pick up the phone and call me and let's discuss it on that number. 0345 6060 973. If you prefer this afternoon, you can text me on 84850 or say, Alexa, send a comment to LBC. Really interested in your thoughts on this. Is there a good reason, as you see it, not to ban smoking in places where there might be children present? Or are you with me that the time for this change is long, long overdue? Let's talk to Bill Wirtz about this, senior policy analyst at the Consumer Choice Centre, who has written extensively about smoking bans. Bill, good to have you with us. The French proposal, exempting bars, exempting cafes, but other public places where children might be, you will not be able to smoke, sounds pretty good to me. So what about you?
Well, I don't think it does, because one of the things that, is the reality about a law is it's only a law if you can actually enforce it. And just let's just imagine the scale of how much enforcement would have to be dedicated to actually make this a reality. Now, currently, Health Minister Catherine Vautrin suggests a fine of 135 euros. And let's imagine what that actually means in practice. Who will actually pay those fines? We've had a lot of conversations over the last few years about selective enforcement of law enforcement and who actually gets busted for these type of infractions. It's often people who are, in socially difficult circumstances, whether it's homeless people or people who have a different skin color, who then will have to pay those fines because we have a problem with selective enforcement of police officers that use this. And I think this is really not conducive of an actual debate about what is being considered in public. I agree that we should be considerate, and it's a bad example for parents to smoke in front of a school. I think the reality of having that conversation ought to be with parents and actually the school organizing an event about this and, making it clear to parents what is a good example and what isn't.
Every parent knows.
Why involve police officers? I don't get it.
Because people already know that smoking around children is bad for their health. And a small minority of people are deciding to do it anyway. So if we can't rely on them to act responsibly, then as with all sorts of other areas of policy, like drug laws and so on, the state has to intervene to protect those kids, doesn't it?
So what would be the solution here, that we call the police on everyone just smoking outside? I mean, the enforcement, I understand the ideal here, but what does that actually do in terms of enforcement? I just don't understand. Why are we using police resources to enforce something that we cannot enforce, when law enforcement should actually be focused on real issues?
But there are drug laws in place, aren't there? There are drug laws in place that stop you smoking certain substances in public places, and that is legal. That is illegal. And yes, is it enforced in every instance? Of course it isn't, but the law is still in place. And a lot of people think for certain substances that should stay in place. So why not just say, well, actually, we'll add tobacco to that list in some settings?
I feel that this is ultimately performative, because smoking rates are going down. The French smoking rate is between 15 and 20%. So the image that you get from the French movies that everyone's sitting around smoking is just not the reality anymore. A lot of people are switching to vaping, or they're switching to nicotine pouches where you can't even tell that somebody's using nicotine anymore.
It's higher.
I think this is a declining problem.
It's higher than the smoking rate here, though. So France has got a bigger problem and is acting to solve it. And it would be less of a burden here, for the reason you give, fewer people smoke anyway. And yet our government has bottled it on this, I would say.
Again, I just don't think this actually solves the problem. I think it's a public conversation about being considerate to other people. But I see the consequences of a rule like this, just inflationary lawmaking for performative purposes. It looks good in the press release, but just explain to me the practicality of it. Like, how will this actually work in practice? And I see a lot of people will have to pay those fines, and it will not actually do anything about it, because you cannot enforce it. It's also a problem that some people smoke in their homes when there's children present. That's not a good thing. But, we can't legislatively do something about this. We can't take people's children away. We have to, when we make rules, we shouldn't be so idealist and think that, we can just, if we involve law enforcement with everything, we can solve it. That's not how
society
works.
But the fact that you can't solve every problem and you can't remove children from risk in every situation doesn't mean that you shouldn't do in some. I agree with you. You can't legislate to make it illegal for people to smoke in their home. But that's not an argument to say, well, actually, we shouldn't act to do it in some settings. And on the point about enforcement, it's a very fair one. The French health minister saying that the police will enforce the ban, but she also is a great believer, as she puts it, in self-regulation. In other words, I think if it is illegal, fewer people will do it.
Well, smoking is illegal indoors in Greece. And if you've ever been to Greece, you see how that's very not enforced at all. It really depends on the dynamic of a society, how that works. I think, on the other hand, that if we want to use law enforcement services, resources to do something about the consumption of tobacco, we should actually enforce the rules more on the sale to minors. How do the kids that are not of the age to buy cigarettes get them from? A lot of shops sell them anyway. That's where the enforcement ought to be. Those shops should lose their license. That's an actual genuine problem. That's 15-year-olds can go and buy cigarettes, and a lot of shops don't enforce the rules. That's where we should dedicate those resources, to have them, to give them less access to those products.
Well, the government is obviously legislating to make it illegal for anybody who is born now and in recent years to do that, to buy cigarettes. Take your point, Bill, about enforcement. But, you know, there are already rules, as you say, about where people can and can't smoke. The smoking ban, when it came in the early 2000s in this country, indoors, was very unpopular. And now, in a way that I think is very positive, you won't go to a pub and find a room that is full of smoke. That is enforced, and that ban has worked. So why wouldn't a ban on outdoor smoking be effective in the same way?
I mean, it's an interesting one because, I mean, there was a bit of a social contract back in 07 and 08 in both the UK and France where it was said, OK, you cannot smoke indoors anymore and you will freeze outside in the winter, but you can still do it outside in the few months that the weather is nice. So essentially what we're doing is we're going back on that social contract and saying now, there won't be any public places where you can't do that either, because it's going to be public gardens, public parks, beaches.
I don't think anyone was promised 25 years ago that they would have an unending right to smoke in parks and children's playgrounds.
It was said that there would still be places where people can smoke.
And there will
be. I mean, it's a legal product after all. If you want to be consistent about it, let's make cigarettes illegal completely. But the problem with that is prohibitionism. In the same way, I don't think the government is right about this generational ban. France already has between 20 and 30% of the cigarette market, which is illicit cigarette. These are gangs smuggling into it. You go to Paris Gare du Nord, you walk outside the train station, the first thing you get offered is illicit cigarettes. They only cost like 3 to 4 euros a pack when the legal ones are 12. What you're doing very often with these rules is you're trying to act in a way to like reform society in a better way. But what we don't realize is there will still be a black market. There will still be people finding out a way. And also, you're making it cool by making it illegal. Oh, we didn't get caught. We smoked on the beach and we didn't get caught. If there's one way to make it interesting, I mean, look, we had cannabis be illegal for a very long time, and clearly that has stopped everyone from consuming that too. I mean, I'm just not a fan of this kind of law and order type of approach.
All right, we'll see what listeners think. Thank you very much indeed, Bill. Interesting conversation. Bill Wirtz is a senior policy analyst at the Consumer Choice Centre, arguing there that it won't work and also it shouldn't work. It's not a good idea in the first place. What do you think? 0345 60 60 973. Should Britain follow France's lead in banning smoking in any outdoor settings, pretty much, where there might be children present? Give me a call if you've got thoughts on that. Come to your calls right after this. It's 4:16.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Chawner. Starting on the M25, moving clockwise, there are queues from Junction 9 for Leatherhead to Junction 10 for the Wisley Interchange. That's all because of a car that's broken down earlier. In Beckenham, the Upper Elmers End Road is closed in both directions between Lloyd's Way and the Close. That's because of an accident. In New Southgate, long delays on the North Circular on the eastbound side from New Southgate to Upper Edmonton. That's adding roughly 45 minutes onto your journey. And in Barnet, Highwood Hill is partially blocked going both ways at Hendon Wood Lane. That's because of a fallen tree. Finally, looking on public transport, there are severe delays on the Northern line due to an earlier fire alert, and on the Bakerloo line, minor delays due to cancellations.
The all-new LBC app. News your way. Download it for free from the App Store. This is LBC.
Sun's out, fun's out. At Tesco Mobile, our deals will help you get the most out of summer. Get a SIM with 100 gigs of data for just £16 a month with club card prices. You'll also collect £20 worth of club card points too. How you choose to spend them is up to you. It pays to be connected. Search Tesco Mobile. Every little helps. Ends 13th July or 1750. Club card 24-month credit agreement and unlocked 4G phone required. Value issued as 2,000 club card points. See tescomobile.com/terms.
Call Ben Kentish. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £185 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Subject to currency fluctuations, the jackpot is capped at €250 million. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
The Red Cross is here to deliver essentials to people who have lost everything in Ukraine.
We are here to support families enduring the food crisis in Somalia.
We're here to shelter earthquake survivors in Turkey and Syria.
We're here for humanity. With your support, the Red Cross has helped millions of people in the UK and 190 other countries. Search British Red Cross to support us. Together, we are the world's emergency responders.
For simple, fuss-free pet insurance policies for cats and dogs, visit petsinapickle.co.uk. For actual pickles, try the supermarket.
Next time you walk their dog or feed their cat, when you pop by for a cuppa or just stop for a chat, tell your friends about Pension Credit. They could be missing out on an average of over £4,000 per year to boost their pension income. Pension Credit also unlocks other support like help with heating costs, council tax, and a free TV licence for people over 75. Tell them to search for Pension Credit on gov.uk. Pension Credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Ben Kentish on LBC.
4:19 the time. Straight to your calls about this smoking ban idea. Interestingly, the Labour government had proposed something not dissimilar. Do you remember that row last year where they sort of vaguely mooted the idea of banning smoking even in beer gardens and then drastically and quite frantically rode back on it? Why aren't we doing what France is doing? Why aren't we banning smoking in outdoor places where there are children or might be children present? What's the objection to it? Alistair's calling from Mablethorpe on this to kick us off. Alistair.
Hi, yes. I mean, absolutely. I mean, I have two children myself, and still, if I go into a children's playground or whatever, I still see adults. Sometimes they'll come in and they'll smoke in there. Even if it's an e-cigarette or whatever, I'm just totally against it. And I think what the French are thinking of doing is absolutely brilliant. You know, we had yesterday, the mayor is thinking of, you know, he's supporting decriminalising drugs and you know, smoking weed on the... I spent a lot of my time so like asking people not to smoke, like, weed around my children.
It's mad that you have to do that, Alistair. I find it mind-boggling that people think nothing of lighting up tobacco, let alone cannabis. I mean, how old are your kids?
I've got a 2.5-year-old and she's going to be 5 soon. So it's just, and I mean, at home we have I used to have a problem with a neighbour who didn't think, and the whole of our communal hallway would just be filled with, you know, drugs. So I think it's a little steps at a time, but I think it's a really, really good idea. You know, society cannot afford smoking anyway, you know, and we just need to at some point really stamp down on this and say to people, no, not around children, definitely not.
What about Bill's point that actually the law's not the right vehicle to do that? It's better to sort of encourage people and educate people and say to them, look, you know, it's bad for the kids, could you maybe do it somewhere else? I just think there's a small minority of people who frankly don't care, and kids need protection in the form of the law from those people.
I totally agree with you. You know, it doesn't matter what you do, you know, whether there is a law or not with some people. These are the people that really need to be dealt with. You know, at the end of the day, I think for children to be just wandering around, let's say in a playground, for example, and just breathing in your smoke, what are you doing? What are you thinking?
But I guess he would say, using your cannabis example, that is illegal and it's not stopping people doing it. So would a ban in place, a ban on smoking in places where there were children present, would it actually change anything practically? Or is it just sort of virtue signalling?
I think, take little steps, but I think you have to use the law. You have to use the law. You know, you can encourage people and you can try and educate people, but I also really do believe you have to use the law.
Alistair, I couldn't agree more. Me and you very much on the same page as this. Thank you for the call. Let's talk to Andrew in Bristol. Andrew, is it a good idea, do you think? Hi.
Oh, hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, just about. Keep going. We'll see how we get on.
I just need to turn my speaker off.
All right, Andrew, tell you what, we'll come back to you. We'll come back to you once you've turned your speaker off and got you on a slightly better line. Let's talk to Gary in Lewisham in the meantime. Gary, you're not convinced by this idea, so afternoon.
No, not at all. I'm sick and tired of people who smoke are always getting criticised. There's people who go on aeroplanes who are drunk. You've only got to go down to sound centres, they're drunk. There's people in the parks that are drunk. I don't hear anyone say, oh, I'm not taking your kids to the park because there's a load of people over there drinking. There's more.
But that's because you don't absorb alcohol into your bloodstream because somebody else is passed out in the corner of the kids' playground, where you do with smoke. It's far more harmful to children than someone drinking in the park.
No, I understand that, but you can also lead to violence. You've only got to look at any of those police programs.
Which is illegal, right? If you are drunk and disorderly, that is a crime. Whereas if you are smoking and filling God knows how many kids' lungs with all sorts of carcinogens, right now that's not illegal.
Yeah, but that's totally irresponsible. You know, people who are going to do that are totally irresponsible.
Well, so why shouldn't it be illegal then, if you agree it's irresponsible?
Well, you can't criminalise everything, can you? You can't say that's you can't have that. I mean, like you touched on it earlier with a Labour thing when they said about in the beer garden.
Yeah.
Can't smoke in the beer garden. So if you've got a wall, a little fence, you step one side of the fence, you can smoke. Step back in the fence, and now you can't smoke.
But Gary,
you're out in the open. You know, sometimes people have to take responsibility for their kids as well and go, well, if other people smoking over there, we'll go to the other end.
But why does the rights of people to smoke in areas where there are lots of children, why does that trump the rights of the kids to enjoy their local playground smoke-free?
No, I'm not saying that. The point I'm making is the people who go and do that, I can't quite work them out. But we're talking as a general thing. I mean, like in France, they're talking about the beach, and they're talking about this, and they're talking about that. At the end of the day, what I'm saying is, you go to any of those events, you'll see people drinking, and a lot of times, drinking leads to violence. But you'll have people who are in control of their children or are responsible for their children sitting there with three or four bottles of wine.
But because the vast majority.
It is illegal to be drunk with a child.
If you are drinking to excess and you are getting drunk and disorderly, that's already a crime. The vast majority. Exactly. But Gary, the vast majority of people who are drinking in areas where there are kids are not harming those kids. Whereas any level of cigarette smoke, particularly in young lungs, is bad for them. It's not the same at all.
In a closed room, but if you're out in the open, you know, the breeze blowing all the time. The kids walk down the street with fumes coming out of cars, and there's, you know, you can't totally protect everyone from everything.
Of course not, but nobody's saying we can or we should. All I'm saying is that if it's places like kids' playgrounds, beaches that are packed with families on a sunny summer's day, standing outside the school gate, how is it not already illegal to smoke when you're picking your kids up from school, for goodness sake?
No, and I couldn't agree more. That is totally.
So,
totally
you with me on that? If it's playgrounds and it's called school, you know, picking up area, school gates. Are you with me on banning it there, Gary?
That's a child environment,
right?
That's
but parks and beaches, you're less sure about.
I'm less sure about that, and pub gardens. If you've gone, you've taken your kids to the pub, and I've gone to the pub for a drink and a bite.
I'd agree with
now
you.
Now I'm being told I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't do this.
But France,
someone's got a kid over the back.
But France isn't doing that. So France has exempted outdoor bars and outdoor cafes, which I think makes sense. But all the rest of it, parks, gardens, sports stadiums, school gates, hospitals, all the rest of it, ban smoking as far as I'm concerned.
I go Charlton all the time, and you can't smoke in the stadium anywhere. As soon as you go through, you can't smoke. And that's fine. That's fine. You're in a close environment and everything else. I understand that.
All right, Gary, I think we agree to an extent. You're just saying that France is going too far. But, I mean, does someone want to call in and argue that it should stay legal to smoke in a children's playground or outside the gates of a school? If that's your view, I'm genuinely interested to hear from you this hour. 0345 606 0973. Let's talk to Ariane. Thank you, Gary. Let's talk to Ariane, first-time caller in Bromley this afternoon. Hi, Ariane.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure.
My name is Arian, and I proposed a social theory model a few days ago, and I contacted the National Health Service, the World Health Organization, and the social theory model is called From Dependence to Independence, and it addresses the tobacco and the drug addiction dependency in Western societies. And I propose that the government should enforce the tobacco companies' production. Half of the stock should be produced only healthy cigarettes.
Healthy cigarettes?
Yes, healthy cigarettes.
What's a healthy cigarette?
Okay. A healthy cigarette is the same as a Marlboro brand cigarette, but the herbs used are different. It can be ginkgo biloba, it can be especially muelli.
So it's not tobacco?
No.
Right.
But it will not kill your lungs. It will not create an addiction, but will, for example, if you buy a healthy East Asian cigar, it will increase your intellectual ability because it will be made of that I use to increase the intellectual ability of students of medicine and other high quality degrees.
Are you saying don't legislate in terms of where people can or can't do it? Change the law instead to alter what they're actually smoking rather than where they're smoking it?
Yes, because most of the kids, nobody wants to get in drugs, and people get in drugs via cigarettes. They're supposed to be smoking weed, and they're smoking a spiked weed.
Right.
Heroin, the same, they start with smoking heroin. So if we can cut that link between unhealthy tobacco and the need for medicate for depression, for anxiety, for self-love, we can change society.
Interesting. Thank you, Ariane. Great first-time call, proposing that the action doesn't need to be about where the smoking is, but what's in the cigarettes themselves. 0345 606 0973. Are you with me that there is no good reason that anybody has the right to smoke around children, or do you think this is going too far now, that we are becoming this sort of massive nanny state, constantly telling people what they can and can't do and where they can or can't do it? Give me a ring on that number. More of your calls to come in a couple of minutes' time. Ben Kentish in for Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. After the news.
After my ADHD diagnosis, I was like, okay, cool, that explains a lot. That explains my time management, my impulsiveness, like my trouble with like spending and feeling my emotions really intensely.
It's been revealed that an estimated 2.5 million people in England have ADHD, most of them not diagnosed. How have the numbers got so high? Look at that in detail after the headlines. Here's Amelia Cox.
A father of three accused of several offences, including GBH, after a car was driven into a crowd of people in Liverpool, has appeared in court. 53-year-old Paul Doyle is accused of injuring 79 people at the Premier League title parade. The BBC has been ordered to pay former Sinn Féin leader Gerry Adams damages after he won a libel case. The High Court in Dublin found in his favour after the broadcaster alleged he sanctioned the killing of a former party official, which he denies. And Russell Brand will go on trial next summer, accused of rape and sexual assault. He's denied five charges relating to four women dating back to between 1999 and 2005. LBC weather turning increasingly breezy with a risk of showers in the north and west tonight. Dry and mainly clear in the south and east, a low of 5 degrees.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall.
Dame Emily Thornberry, chair of the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, Labour MP. In Islington as well, of course, joins me in the studio. Do you think we're moving on from the Brexit wars?
I think they probably don't care. I mean, I think that on the whole, those who wanted to leave are happy. Those who didn't want to leave are not particularly happy. But everybody's kind of moved on.
Listen on your radio, on Global Player and the new LBC app.
Do you agree with him that they are using starvation as a weapon of war?
They say that they are not allowing food into Gaza in order to get the hostages back. I have to say, this is not the way to behave. They have to stop. This far-right government is behaving in the most appalling way, and there will be a reckoning.
Sunday with Lewis Goodall. Sunday morning from 10 on LBC.
Discover outlet shopping at the O2 this spring. Save up to 70% off RRP on over 60 designer brands, including Nike, Adidas, Levi's, Kate Spade, The Cosmetics Company Store, Le Creuset, and more. And with over 30 bars and restaurants, a cinema, bowling, climbing, interactive football, mini golf, paddle tennis, and indoor skydiving, why not stay for the day? Visit us at North Greenwich, just 15 minutes from central London. Search outlet shopping at the O2 and plan your trip today.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
How do you grow a perfectly sweet strawberry? Well, it takes more than just soil and water.
time, care and the best conditions to flourish. At Tesco, we keep every strawberry warm during the day and cold during the night to ensure they develop the sweetest flavour. It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now, if you don't mind, the strawberries are sleeping. Tesco, every little helps.
Ready, steady, the Toyotathon sale event is on! Race down to your nearest Toyota centre and save up to an extra £1,000 on a new Toyota. But hurry, deals must end 31st of May. The Toyotathon sale event is on. Offer valid on eligible new vehicle orders 1st to 31st of May and registered by 31st of July 2025. Retail customers only. T&Cs apply. See toyota.co.uk for details.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060 973.
4:34 is the time. Ben Kentish here on LBC. We talk more about ADHD. There's quite stunningly high figures of people with it or thought to have it in the UK in just a moment. Just before that, though, let's talk to Andrew in Bristol. Andrew, not about ADHD, but about smoking. France banning it in most public spaces in order to protect children. Should we do the same? Afternoon.
Hi, yes. I'm opposed to banning things in general and criminalising people. But, however, my main point is smoking is important for people with mental illness. I started at 17 and smoked for many years, had a two-year break, and then started again when my rent went up from 600 to 900. And the anxiety was so strong, I had to buy cigarettes. And I've looked at studies online. I have a background in psychology in terms of a degree, and the study, I mean, I call it a study in front of me, which I can cite to you, a longitudinal examination of the relationship between smoking and panic and anxiety and depression in Chinese and German students. And one thing it found is smoking did predict lower anxiety in German students. And I think I might not be able to go outdoors if I couldn't smoke. And I don't like personally smoking in my house, but I wouldn't smoke around children.
Why don't you like smoking in your house?
Because I smoke for the chemical effect that it has on you. I know that from personal anecdote that it decreases my anxiety. And as I've said, if you look at the study,
why don't you like doing it in your house? Because of the smell?
Because it feels, it's the smell. It's like a cloud of smoke accumulates.
Right.
Outdoors, it spreads around. But why should
you be free to inflict, if you don't like that yourself? And I take the point about smoking and the benefits of
why
it.
Why should you be free to inflict that on children? I go outdoors. I've got ADHD and autism. And the sound of people's cars driving up the wall, I feel intimidated.
Right.
People won't give up their cars for children. I would ban cars overnight. I hate them.
You'd ban all cars?
Get run over by cars. I would, unless they were needed for nursing or something. Use public transport. People won't sacrifice that.
What about the parts of the country where there isn't public transport, where it would take people hours to get to work?
Then they need to move nearer their job.
There's a benefit.
They ruin my life.
Andrew,
my anxiety levels are really high every time I go out.
And I'm sorry to hear it, but there's a massive benefit to driving in a way that there isn't for most people with smoking. Of course, it takes the edge off anxiety. I understand that completely, and that's why I'm certainly not saying ban smoking, but I am saying that it should be banned in areas where there are likely to be children who could also be harmed by your smoke. It's a trade-off, isn't it? It's a trade-off between the importance, the benefits for one person, as you in your case, versus the downsides and the negative consequences for somebody else. And that's why I'm saying you can still smoke, but you shouldn't be able to do it around kids. Thank you for the call, Andrew. Talk more about that in just a moment. First, let's turn our focus to the quite staggering news today that 2.5 million people in England alone are thought to have ADHD. A higher estimate than some had previously put it. It's the first time that official figures have suggested the number of people who might have that condition. Why is it so high and is it getting higher? Let's talk to Oliver Howes, Professor of Molecular Psychiatry at King's College London. Oliver, one in 20 adults, one in 20 children, not far off, one in 20 adults thought to have ADHD. That's a lot higher than many people would estimate.
Yes, it does sound like a lot, but actually that's what the studies have shown us. And we've now had well over 100 studies from different settings all around the world, different research groups. And this is what people have found repeatedly, particularly when you do the full formal diagnostic assessment. It comes out at just under 1 in 20 children and around 1 in 30 adults. So this is what we'd expect. But I agree, it does sound like a lot. But that's because I think there's been a lack of recognition of this problem for so many years. So people are just not aware of it. And then, you know, now we're beginning to appreciate it. And it's the studies are beginning to get the publicity. So it is a pretty common illness.
If we went back 50, 100, maybe even 500 years, would you expect to see similar rates of incidence? Or do you think there is something about the modern world that is leading to an increase in the number of people with ADHD?
That's a really good question. As you know, 500 years, I don't know. It's a long way back. We didn't have very different setting. We didn't have a diagnostic. Sure.
But you see what I'm getting at? Has it always been like this, or is it a new phenomenon?
We don't have, you know, if you go back 100, 150 years, we don't have the studies, but you can, of course, look at literature and people's accounts. And it was very clear that it was recognized in Victorian times, for example, as well. And you know, there's the cautionary tales. Do you know the book by the German author, and he talks about Fidgety Phil in that, and that actually, if you look at that, that's actually describing many of the symptoms of ADHD. So you know, this was written over 100 years ago, and it's a not very nice description of some of the symptoms. So it's certainly recognised a long time ago, and probably I suspect that actually. That the prevalence hasn't changed that much. It's really? Just that we haven't recognised it until more recently, and the research has really caught up with what's been going on. And you know, you see that there are a lot of people, especially adults now, where it hasn't been recognised. They're beginning to get a diagnosis now in adulthood, but you look at what impact it's had, that under recognition, the fact they haven't had treatment, because ADHD, it really affects people's lives. We talked before when I was on LBC with one of your colleagues about some studies showing that people with ADHD die earlier than the general population, 5 to 10 years earlier. So you know, it has an effect on life expectancy as well as other things. And actually, treatment, there's evidence that treatment reduces that, actually reduces the mortality. So this isn't just a sort of academic concept. Getting the numbers right, knowing what the prevalence is, it means that more people get effective treatment, actually this could save lives, and help people in their lives as well.
And we've had a lot of people, it's become quite a popular argument, it's even being made by the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, that conditions, including ADHD, are being over-diagnosed. Do the findings today actually suggest that that's not the case, Oliver?
Yes, I think you're right. It's we've still got a problem of underdiagnosis.
The health secretary himself is wrong on this.
Yes. You know, the studies tell us that it's between 1 in 20, it's one about 1 in 20 children, 1 in 30 adults. But actually, if you look at the numbers who are diagnosed in GP records, it's much lower than this, particularly in adults. So, you know, I think Wes Streeting is wrong to say that. And I think he's wrong also, because why are we talking about overdiagnosis of these illnesses, these mental conditions? We also have had increases in the numbers of people diagnosed with other conditions like cancer. But I don't hear Wes Streeting and other people saying, cancer is overdiagnosed.
Yes.
So, I think we need to think about that.
Is it unhelpful, that sort of language from someone in that
position? Yeah, I think it is unhelpful. I think it's unhelpful because there are effective treatments out there, and it's implying in somehow that what is it? I mean, there is some sort of implication here that either the doctors are getting it wrong or the patients are sort of fabricating things. Yep. And I think, you know, that's really unhelpful, particularly when, as we were talking about, you know, there can be major impacts on people's lives of these sorts of conditions.
Absolutely. Really interesting, Oliver. Thank you very much, Oliver House, Professor of Molecular Psychiatry at King's College London. And of course, an awful lot of people wanting to get a diagnosis, seeking a diagnosis. I was told it was 3 years when I looked into it, and only finding that when they ask for help, the help is potentially many years away. If you've got thoughts on that, if you've got an experience of that, do get in touch this hour, 03456060973. 4:43 is the time. Ben Kentish here on LBC. And Sarah's in Wimborne this afternoon to talk about exactly that. Sarah, hi.
Hi, Ben. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Great to have you with us, Sarah.
Thank you. Yeah, I must admit, I'm not having the best day with it at the moment, best time.
Oh, I'm sorry, Sarah. What's going on?
Thank you. Well, what it is, you see, I was, you know, lucky enough to be fairly high functioning in ADHD and autism, actually, and one or two other bits often come in with it. And so, you know, now I'm 59 now, but, you know, it's been harder since 59. I mean, 55, and my mum had ADHD. See, well, for women, we don't get, you know, women as we grow up, we're taught to be good, don't say this when we're growing up as children. It gets missed because, but I've got all the, you know, normal things. I can't ride a bike, couldn't turn my time, I, you know, shoelaces well at the beginning. I've got all the normal stuff that would show that I was on the autistic spectrum and then the ADHD as well. But it was missed with women, you know. And so it's coming out more in women once they get to more like 55 because we have the decline in estrogen,
right,
which then impacts on dopamine regulation. And so it becomes so much harder for one to live one's life. And it's already been a struggle.
And was actually that, Sarah, when you got your diagnosis in your mid-50s?
Well, yeah, I had the autism via, it is for me and myself, but I've been to see my GP, I've had some assessments, and, yeah, you know, they said, well, yeah, I think we have without the formal, because it's hard to get it at the moment.
It's a years-long wait, isn't it, in many cases, to get an ADHD assessment.
And they expect you to fill out the form. It's very ableist. They expect, and it's like, oh my goodness, I can't really go into all this detail. No.
What would it mean if you? What would it mean to you if you did get a diagnosis? Would it change something quite significantly?
I must admit, at the moment, I'm thinking, well, maybe I would try the medication, but they have downsides, you know, because I'm a very sensitive person as it is,
yes,
for anything, herbs, anything. What would it mean to me? Well, at least for us women, we've not had the research done on our bodies in the past. We still aren't. It would mean a lot, I think, to recognise that us women have had short straw on lots of things and that we were treated with respect and given the support that we need.
And you're right, of course, it's still, both of the conditions you're talking about still massively underdiagnosed across the board, but particularly in girls and particularly in women. Sarah, thank you. Wish you all the best with it. It's a difficult journey. It's a long journey for too many people, far longer than it ought to be. Keep your calls and thoughts coming in on ADHD. Really interested in your experiences of what we were just talking about. Ben Kentish in for Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. Still to come.
Comedian Russell Brand has pleaded not guilty to rape and sexual assault charges. I'm LBC's Helen Hodnott with the latest.
Bring all the very latest details on that story just after this, 4:46.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Chawner. Starting on the M25, moving clockwise, it's partially blocked from junction 15 for the M4 interchange to junction 16 for the M40 interchange. That's all because of an accident. And staying on the M25 going clockwise, there are queues from junction 9 for Leatherhead to junction 10 for the Wisley interchange. That's because of a car that broke down earlier in Beckenham up at Elmers End Road. That's closed in both ways from Lloyd's Way to the Close because of an accident. While in New Southgate, long delays on the North Circular on the eastbound side from New Southgate to Upper Edmonton. That's adding roughly 45 minutes onto your journey. Finally, in Barnet Gate, Highwood Hill is partially blocked in both directions at Hendonwood Lane. That's because of a fallen tree.
LBC.
Save up to 50% in the Dunelm sale.
Don't miss huge savings on thousands of products like bedding, rugs, home accessories, curtains, and far too many things to mention. Save up to 50% in store and online now with free click and collect in as little as 2 hours at Dunelm,
the home of homes.
T's and C's apply.
Call Ben Kentish, 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Looking for a fun-filled day out this spring? The O2 has it all. Catch the latest blockbuster at Cineworld or challenge your friends with interactive football at Toker Social. Take on darts, mini golf and more at Boom Battle Bar. Get active with a game of paddle tennis, climb to new heights or take flight with an indoor skydive at iFly. Feeling hungry? Choose from over 30 bars and restaurants and discover flavours from around the world. Search Do More at the O2 to start planning your perfect day.
Thanks to their
unique boutique spirit. There really is nothing quite like a Saga River Cruise. There are the elegantly designed Spirit ships, the all-inclusive dining, and of course, Saga's carefully selected excursions. You know, they'll even drive you to and from the airport with their nationwide chauffeur service.
How long now, Charles?
Oh, half an hour.
Marvellous. Search Saga River Cruises. Experience is everything. 2026 season on sale now. Chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply, over 50s only.
Tired of watching your uninvested cash do nothing? With the Bank of England base rate reducing, investment platform IG is doing something extraordinary. IG is offering a whopping 8.5% AER variable on all uninvested cash. Yes, 8.5%. Just open an account, transfer money in, and make one investment before May 31st to unlock this incredible rate. Visit ig.com now to open an investment account today. Your capital is at risk. GIA, ISA and SIP accounts only. Boosted rate applies until 31st August 2025. Terms and conditions apply.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
I'm making a robot head with an Amazon box. I've painted it silver and Daddy helped me make it.
At Amazon, we're actually using paper bags for more of our deliveries.
And now I'm making a paper hot air balloon. And I even made a little brown basket. And I'm making a dog that looks just like Monty.
Just one of the ways we've reduced the weight of our packaging by more than 40% since 2015. Which is still good for playtime.
Mom, where's the scissors?
To learn more, visit aboutamazon.co.uk/sustainability.
Ben Kentish on LBC.
4.50 the time, talk to Gower, a first-time caller, about all things smoking and whether we should follow the French lead in banning it in public outdoor places where there are children. Gower, come to you in just a moment. First, though, just want to touch on the news today that Russell Brand, comedian actor, has pled not guilty to rape and sexual assault charges during his appearance at Southern Crown Court in London earlier today. Helen Hodnott is LBC's reporter covering the story. Helen.
So, Ben, he had his first Crown Court appearance today in Southwark after an initial hearing at magistrates earlier this month, and he's pleaded not guilty to all of the charges against him. He arrived to a swarm of journalists and photographers and didn't say a word as he walked straight up the steps outside the court building, wearing a black suit and a striped black shirt unbuttoned to his midriff. Police flanked the route from his chauffeur driven car to the court where he had the charges read to him again. The five charges relate to four different women and are alleged to have taken place in central London and Bournemouth between 1999 and 2005. He's accused of raping a woman in a hotel room while she attended a Labour Party conference in Bournemouth and grabbing another woman, groping her, orally raping her after dragging her into a male toilet. He's also alleged to have grabbed another woman's face, pushing her against a wall and groping her also. And the final charges charge alleges that he indecently assaulted another woman after grabbing her arm and trying to drag her into a male toilet. He stood in the dock as he spoke to confirm his name. He replied not guilty after each of the counts were put to him. He then put his sunglasses back on and walked out of the dock, thanking the usher as he left. The 49-year-old of Hambledon in Buckinghamshire has previously said in a video he posted on social media after he was initially charged in April that he was looking forward to defending himself in court. The judge set a provisional trial date for the 3rd of June next year, agreeing to let Russell Brand leave the court today on conditional bail.
Helen, thank you very much. And Helen Hodnott, LBC's reporter, with that update. 4.52 is the time. Ben Kentish in for Tom Swarbrick here on LBC. Let's come to Gower, first-time caller in Herne Hill this afternoon. Gower, you want to talk about this French smoking ban and whether it's a good idea? Please. Evening.
Hi, Ben. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I think it's a good thing that they're doing. Ultimately, if you can smell smoke, you're breathing it in. They've got higher smoking rates in France than we have here in the UK. And, you know, whose rights are more important? You know, kids have the right to breathe fresh air And I think that's a more important right than somebody to, you know, ultimately inflict, you know, something which is harmful. Secondhand smoke is harmful on them. And I think, you know, from an enforcement point of view, you know, I kind of liken it a little bit, I suppose, to seatbelts. I think the key thing here is it's another piece of legislation that will continue to denormalise.
Do you think it is enforceable, though, Gower? Because, I mean, you know, it's a lovely sunny weekend this weekend. Do we want police walking around the local park, nicking people or issuing on-the-spot fines because someone's got a cigarette in their hand?
I think it's, you know, perhaps a starting point, and I liken it to, you know, something like seatbelts. You know, if you drive in a car without a seatbelt, is that enforceable? The point is that the culture and the norms have changed.
That the law sort of triggers a cultural change, even if it's not that strictly enforced.
Yeah,
absolutely. So as the indoor smoking ban.
I think whether it's, you know, you call it peer pressure or just, you know, the norms of society that will come to find that's unacceptable. And clearly there's huge public support for these kind of changes. In fact, I caught sight of an ASH, Action on Smoking at Health, kind of YouGov poll, which I think came out today, and something like 90%+ of people support, you know, just the extension of smoking bans where, you know, kids are around children's play areas.
And the government, I mean, you know, we can have a debate about beer gardens and parks and beaches and so on. And I sort of take that there will be mixed views on that. When the government says it's considering banning smoking outside schools and in kids' playgrounds, I mean, what is there to consider? It's a kid's playground, for goodness sake. If you think you have the right to smoke everywhere, including a kid's playground, then I'm sorry, but I just think that's the height of selfishness.
Yeah, I kind of agree. You know, they need to consult on these things, and I suppose one thing they may be mindful of would be unintended consequences, like forcing people who are smoking, and I used to be a smoker. I started at 13 and it took me to 40 to quit. But we also don't want those people to go indoors where it's even worse to smoke indoors. That would be an example for me trying to be balanced as an unintended consequence you don't want. But ultimately, the rights of those kids, for me, are more important. And, you know, if you kind of start around hospitals in children's areas and that gradual increasing denormalisation, you know, once it was legal to smoke in a car with kids.
Yeah,
you know, another ban that came in, and here's another one that's extending it.
Absolutely. I think I agree with every word you say, Gower. Thank you. What a brilliant first call. A cultural change that often follows legal change means it's worthwhile, even if every single incidence of law breaking, if smoking is banned outside, isn't strictly enforced. Thanks, Gower. Alex is calling from Huddersfield this afternoon. Alex, you want to pick up on the ADHD topic we were talking about a little earlier?
I do, Ben, yeah. I went through a lot of my young adult life thinking, why am I not the same as anyone else? Why does no one else have these constant conversations going 100 mile an hour in the head? Why does no one else interrupt conversations with something better to say, you know, in the moment? And why can I just not switch my brain off?
Yes.
And then I realised when I spoke to my girlfriend at the time, she was like, maybe you've just got ADHD. And I said, yeah, but I'm not hyper. I'm not a little kid running around a playground 100 mile an hour. Like, anyway, then I realised that you can just be attention deficit disorder without the hyper.
Yep.
So I went to the doctors and I got diagnosed. I tried to get diagnosed. They said there was a long waiting list and that they would be in touch. That was 3 years ago. I've not heard anything since. So I decided to take it upon myself to try and do something about it. I realised mainly that I had ADHD when I tried recreational drugs, and everybody else that was on those drugs was life and soul of party, running around, jumping about, you know, like anyone on drugs would be. And I was just in a zen world in my own head. Everything was calm, everything was collected, and I was just enjoying.
Was that the only time that you've ever had that experience of a quiet mind?
Yes, 100%. And I couldn't believe it. And then when I went and researched it myself online, I realised that certain drugs have the absolute opposite effect on the ADHD brain, hence why they prescribe prescription drugs for ADHD. So I took it upon myself and I researched magic mushrooms, which are pretty useful for that. There's a lot of studies to show that. It's just with it being a Class A drug, they can't research it in the UK. But
there's a lot of research going on to it's the psilocybin ingredient, isn't it? There's a lot of academic research going into that.
Yep.
Alex, it sounds very similar to me. You know, there's a sort of stereotype when it comes to ADHD of a young disruptive child who can't sit still and is hyperactive. Yeah. But actually, the thing that made me pursue a diagnosis was that it's that racing mind, it's that inability to switch off. I remember when I went over for a weekend a while ago, my wife and we both went to this nice hotel, both had massages, and she said, "It's so nice, isn't it, when you're just lying there and you're not thinking anything?" And I said, "What?
What's that feel like?"
I said, I don't know I've ever experienced that. I genuinely have never experienced that in my life.
Exactly. And she couldn't nail it more.
Yeah.
You can't switch off. You can't, like... And don't get me wrong, it's very fashionable right now to have ADHD, and it is quite frustrating as a person who feels he's genuinely got ADHD.
Yep.
It is quite frustrating to see people throwing it around because it's fashionable. I can't say whether they're wrong or right because I don't know what they're like. I only can speak for my own opinion. But I saw Nick Tice saying that ADHD and all these things are being overdiagnosed and they're going to clamp down on that.
It's a political sort of bandwagon that people keep jumping on. Whereas to get the diagnosis, and you're not quite there, Alex, I think you're saying you haven't caught quite the diagnosis yet, but it sounds like you're well on the way. You have to go through all sorts of hoops. And then you see a clinical doctor specialising in that area. And only they can tell you. So for any politician who thinks they know more about ADHD than some actual psychiatrist...
Yeah,
I mean, it's absurd.
I think it was really poignant, that guy you had on from London City College. He obviously has no interest in saying whether it's overdiagnosed or underdiagnosed. He's just speaking from facts. And he said it's massively underdiagnosed. Yep. And that speaks volumes, doesn't it?
And he's the expert. So these politicians that think they know more about it, well, clearly they don't. And